The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you can be with us. SB Nation AM rolling along this morning. College football, what a weekend. NFL's coming up Thursday night as Nick Foles and the Eagles take on the Atlanta Falcons. And then we get right into the full schedule, and we are rolling along in the fall. Kevin McGuire, NBC Sports, talking college football. That is coming up later in this hour. You don't want to miss that as we go over some of the week one storylines. How did our boy at USC do over the week? I knew he threw a touchdown. And how was his USC debut? The young freshman. Do we know?
No.
Did we watch it? No, I don't know.
Man, I watch.
Watch a little bit of it. I saw a little bit of the highlights.
I've never been a fan of USC.
Not been a fan of USC?
No.
Oh, okay. So you in Southern California, were you a UCLA guy or just something else?
No, I wasn't either one.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to think back for as far as college football was concerned, like who I follow the most. But USC, I don't know if it was just a little off-putting. I liked going to that campus. It was a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun partying there.
JT Daniels, 282 yards with a touchdown. He's supposed to be in high school. Instead, he's playing for USC.
That's a good game.
And a win against UNLV, 43-21. They scored 24 points in the fourth quarter to pull away. Pac-12 football. I'm sorry. I don't mean to harp on this. Washington, you got to go on the road and win that game. You've got to go win that game. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to say it. People will say, oh, it's a good loss. Auburn's a good team. No, it isn't. The Pac-12 needed that. It really, really needed that. And instead, a lot of people don't know this, but Auburn played its third straight game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium going back to last year. They played the SEC title game against Georgia. They played in the Peach Bowl, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, whatever it's called, against UCF. And then kicked off the season against Washington. Yes, Atlanta is very much a home game for Auburn. I get it. More so than Washington. I get it. But again, go and win that game and set the Pac-12 up for success.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
SB Nation AM rolling along this morning. Glad you could be with us the day after Labor Day as we head into the NFL season. Thursday night, Atlanta taking on Philadelphia, then the weekend blows up. So, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, you're part of Bills Mafia, Ron. Hear me out on this. Do you wake up today going, Man, I'm so excited about the momentum of making the playoffs last year, and Nathan Peterman is the guy I want.
Nah, I'm throwing someone through a table.
I'm pretty bummed out about this. That in a quarterback battle between an exciting rookie, A.J. McCarron, who's serviceable, and a guy that threw five interceptions in his debut last season, the guy you came up with is the guy that threw five interceptions in his debut. Now, I know. The Bills made that decision because in the preseason, Peterman was completing 80% of his passes. And he had different times in the preseason. He was playing against different levels of defense, sometimes not the best defenses, sometimes the first team. He was getting a lot of mixes and mashups of work in the preseason. But he still completed 80% of his passes, and that was enough to beat out a rookie. And A.J. McCarron had gotten hurt and basically ended up being trade bait and was shipped off to Oakland. But if I'm a Buffalo Bills fan, this makes me go, wah, 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 and I don't feel so good about this upcoming season. Just made the playoffs, and now I feel like we're rebuilding again. Whereas the Jets, the J-E-T-S, Jets, are starting Sam Darnold, and I don't think anybody in the New York City area that actually roots for that team is sad about it. I think they're thrilled. So can the Bills learn from something and just go, hey, Josh Allen, here are the Wolves. Go nuts. Let's see what you do. And let's just roll with it. Or the Bills become, they're coming off a playoff year last year, too scared to do that. You know, I got to tell you something. Josh Allen is going to start this year at some point, probably within this month. Maybe early October, but he's getting that starting job. But that's sad to me that, I don't know, Nathan Peterman, I don't want to knock him too much, but he wasn't very good. And the Bills made the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. And now they got a guy who's they don't believe in, or at least the fans don't. The coaches can say all they want, but they don't. Whereas in Jets land, Sam Darnold era has begun and everybody's thrilled. So that's the quarterback issue there. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I can't believe the Bills, that's what they ended up with. They ended up with a guy they should have got rid of. A guy that we're kind of embarrassed that they put him in that situation. And now he's their starter? I'd be livid. But I'm not a Bills fan.
And on top of that, you still don't really know the status of McCoy.
No, that's true.
There's a good chance. I think he'll be, I'm pretty sure he'll be there week one, right? I haven't heard anything.
No, I haven't heard either.
But,
I don't know where that case is going these days.
The suspension is looming.
Someday it'll come down. Maybe never. But still, they're gonna need Peterman to do some things. And if he's, I don't know, it's just, I liked the Bills making the playoffs last year. I'm not a Bills fan, but I like good stories. And the Bills making the playoffs last year was a good story. Listen, I got to be honest with you. I don't know if I could make it if my team didn't make the playoffs in 20 years. I don't know if I could handle that. That's a really long time to go without a postseason. I mean, a really long time. I got a friend of mine. She's a Bills fan. And her kids, she raised her kids up and they became Bills fans, which, I mean, is just incredible when you think about it. And they live in New England. They live in New Hampshire. So the kids didn't grow up Patriots fans. They followed their mother's team. And one of her children is in college. The other one's a junior in high school. Before this year, they never witnessed the Buffalo Bills make the postseason. Never. How hard is that to do in this league? I mean, the Browns' last playoff berth was at least in 2002. How hard is it to miss the playoffs for 20 years? The league begs you. It's literally begging you, giving you everything you want to make the playoffs.
I mean, I guess it's understandable, say, in baseball, where it's only four.
In baseball, right.
Four from each league.
And the economics are different, right? If you're a broke small market team, you gotta hit those prospects just right. But in the NFL, it's like Alex Baldwin and Glenn Ross, where he's giving that speech. And he goes, they're sitting there wanting to give you their money. Are you man enough to take it? It's like the league is saying, here's everything you need to make the postseason. Equilibrium across the board financially? Check. First round draft picks? Check. The ability to go out there and get whatever general manager you need? Check. Free agents? You'll have the ability to go get the best. Doesn't matter size of the market. Doesn't matter. You have just as big of economic strength being in Green Bay as you do in New York City. Check. Here, go create a team that's capable of winning games. And the Bills for 20 years could not do that. And then they finally do. They finally break free. And they're able to make the postseason. And they come back the next year and are led by a guy that in his NFL debut threw like 10 passes and five of them were interceptions. I mean, it's criminal. And it's too bad because that fan base is great. They're a really loyal fan base. There's no empty seats there. There's nobody giving away their season tickets and saying, I'm never going to support this team again. No. They're dying. They're dying for the Bills to be successful. I like good stories. That's why I thought they were a good story last year. Remember they had to win it. Remember Andy, like we did the story about Andy Dalton. They won it when Andy Dalton on fourth down hit a got a touchdown against the Ravens to knock Baltimore out of the playoffs and put Buffalo in. And then Buffalo went to lose to Jacksonville, but no shame in that. And nevertheless, they give Nathan Peterman. I can't wait to see Sam Darnold, though. With the Jets. I'm interested to see how that's going to go.
Yeah, I think that's the right move for them, too. I know we make a big deal of like, oh, starting rookie quarterbacks, but I think there are some quarterbacks that just have it.
Yeah, I think Darnold's a guy. I think Darnold can do it. You do have to be careful. I don't believe, I'm one of those guys that, in our business, it's better to have one, to have a take, like this is, I believe this and I believe that. Sometimes though, sometimes it just has to be coach's call, right? And I don't believe you start rookies. I think you start some rookies. I think some rookies have no business being under center. I think you have to be very, very careful, especially if they're the franchise quarterback. If you're going to be building a team around them, you don't want a David Carr situation or David Carr in Houston just got sacked a trillion times and was just never found a rhythm. The list is long and deep of quarterbacks that were just not ready, not quite ready, lost confidence, got hurt, and just never really came through, never really found their rhythm in the league. It's a tough league. It's a tough league. There's very little separation with your wide receivers if you're used to that. I mean, think about all the Florida quarterbacks. They used to chuck the rock all over the place down there in Gainesville for Steve Spurrier. Well, yeah, because their wide receivers were open by 15 yards. Till the SEC defense were like, let's get some fast defensive backs. Danny Werfel had Riddell Anthony wide open for 20 yards. I mean, he was just hitting these guys catch and throw. And then when Werfel gets to the NFL, it's like, wait a minute, hold on. That window is like sliver thin. I can't hit that receiver anymore. So quarterbacks get into this league, it's the speed. And some quarterbacks are just, they can get it. They understand it. They've got a very good arm. They got a good read of speed and they're fine. Other quarterbacks, if they don't get ready, if you don't have them ready, you'll lose them. And when you lose them, that's a draft pick. Look at John Elway, not to harp on my favorite conversation, Ron, but look at John Elway getting rid of Paxton Lynch over the weekend.
Right. Speaking of the team you were talking about, guess who Paxton Lynch is working out for?
Buffalo Bills.
See, there you go. There's a silver lining to the Buffalo Bills.
There's a silver lining in Bills land. Paxton Lynch might be coming in. John Elway drafted Paxton Lynch in the first round. Great. Now he's gone a couple of years later. Either A, the team lost him, or B, he was massively, massively over-scouted and really under-scouted because he didn't make it.
And again, that goes back to a point we made last hour as it scratches your head of what the Raiders were thinking.
Right.
Because, exactly. I mean, here's a guy, John Elway, obviously we can all assume he knows quarterbacks.
We think.
He knows how to play the position and drafted a guy who he thought was the man and turned out not to be. That was a first-round pick that just burned and threw away.
Here's the assumption on John Elway. John Elway knows when to sign a legend coming off a neck surgery. That's it.
That's
all he's got. That's it. Everything else has been a disaster. But that's it. Case Keenum, maybe he's lightning in a bottle again. And he's the guy that gets him back to the postseason and possibly a Super Bowl run. Wink, wink. But all John Elway has done with the quarterback position since arriving in late 2010 is that he signed a legendary quarterback who's coming off a neck injury, which many teams would have done. Brock Osweiler didn't work. Case Keenum didn't work. Paxton Lynch didn't work. Trevor Siemian hasn't worked. He hasn't found his guy. He hasn't found the replacement. And it's hard. Look, you're replacing the man. I get it. Peyton Manning did wonderful things in Denver. 2 Super Bowl appearances, 1 Super Bowl title.
Yeah, but you know what? The Colts were able to replace Manning.
Yeah. You don't get lucky like that every day.
So it's not impossible. Patriots could have replaced Brady a couple of times.
Yeah, a couple of times. Decided against
but
that.
But Brady's drinking from the fountain of youth and sticking around.
Brady will be quarterbacking in his 60s if Alex Guerrero has anything to say about it. By the way, if Tom Brady is a successful quarterback at, let's say, 45, does Guerrero get more love? Does he get more credit when the history of the Patriots is written?
Does he get first-class tickets on the team plane?
Right, exactly. If Guerrero's like, it's a secret between me and Tom, but trust me, he'll be as healthy at 45 than he is at 35. It's just, I can't tell you what I'm doing, but it's all legal. He won't fail a drug test, but trust me, 45 years old, it'll be like he's 35. Robert Kraft will buy him a mansion.
Now Guerrero will get to sit in the cockpit with the pilots.
He'll be able to fly the plane if he wants. All right, 800-777-2907 is Tony D and Ron Culver rolling along at SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Coming up in 12 minutes, 40 past the hour, Kevin McGuire will join us from NBC Sports. We'll talk about college football week one. We'll talk about Notre Dame's win over Michigan. Alabama rolling. The big weekend for the SEC. Can we get a love for the SEC, Ron Culver? Come on. Join the party.
Oh,
join the SEC
right.
Love Fest today.
Yeah, you know what? They did a good job.
Everybody but Tennessee. poor Vols.
Well, I'm glad they lost, though. We got a good fan moment from Tennessee's loss.
Yeah, we did. That is true. Good fan moment. But if you... If the Vols had won, you would have gotten Rocky Top. Wish that I was on old Rocky Top. Oh, come on. That's a good little tune.
I'm not saying it's not a good tune. I'm just saying it's not the same thing.
It's not my tune.
But Take Me Home Country Road just feels better.
That's very West Virginia-like. Good old Mountaineers. Will Greer, fantastic. I think West Virginia could. If they win the Big 12, I don't know. Oklahoma looked very sharp. Very, very sharp. Maryland looked good too. You know, a lot of people had been putting out this thing because of what happened to Jordan McNair. It was really, really tragic that Maryland should shut down their football program. I don't like when people do that. I don't like when we go that far. There are problems, yes, and you can fix it, but you can fix it without destroying a whole thing. You know, listen. It is sad when an athlete dies. I listen, no doubt about it. And it's worse when they die of neglect and some stupidity by the coaches. But you fire the coaches. You don't get rid of the institution of the football program at Maryland. That is overboard. That is overreacting. You don't have to kill the Maryland football program. You just got to get rid of the coaches that did that awful thing and fill it with coaches who don't do that awful thing, and you keep the football program. Do people realize how much money good football programs bring to a school? I don't
Not
think
only that, but
this.
I mean, if you were to say, hey, you know what, no one's playing football this year, how much time it actually takes to rebuild a program, if you just miss a year.
Look at SMU. SMU was a power team in the 80s. They had Eric Dickerson and Craig James running the football. They were a powerful, powerful football team. Then they got the death penalty, and you don't hear about SMU anymore, do you? No, you do not. It takes a long time to build it back up again. When I saw that, I thought, look, we have got to stop in this country to be over, outraged over so much. Be outraged at Jordan McNair's death, absolutely, but be outraged at the people who caused that. That was not a football thing, a Maryland football thing. That was the coaches at Maryland. Yes, did they make a mistake on hiring those guys? Probably. Did they make a mistake not monitoring that? Sure, absolutely. But you don't kill the football program and everybody that's involved in it, that's employed by it, that keeps that thing afloat. I mean, there's full-time employees that make a living for their families with that football program. Get rid of the people that did wrong, but you don't have to kill the place. Absolutely. You know, it's so ridiculous that we treat football is a very, very important thing to a lot of the budgets at schools. I know for the athletic budgets, especially. Look, I talk about this all the time. We talk about these cupcake schedules the teams use, right? Oh, why are you playing Charleston Southern? For Charleston Southern, they need that game. They need a couple of those a year. They need that money because the golf team doesn't fund itself when it travels. Right? I mean, swimming, what do you think, swimming? How do you think 10 swimmers from West Virginia get to a meet in Palo Alto, California? What do you think, donations from their parents? No, it's part of the athletic budget that comes from football. Most of it coming from football. I mean, look, all these sports, whether it's track or gymnastics, these non-revenue sports, football is very, very important. Especially if you're a school that is getting paid $1 million to go get their brains beat in by Alabama. You know, if you go get your check and leave. You know what's even better, though, is when you get your check and win. And guess who almost did that this weekend, Ron Culver? Appalachian State. Almost pulled the upset on Penn State this weekend. If Appalachian State had pulled off that victory, and they almost did, If they had pulled off that victory over the weekend, they can kiss any sort of big game, get a paycheck game in their future. No one will ever schedule them again. Lightning doesn't strike twice like that in college football without something going on. What is in the water in Boone, North Carolina that puts Appalachian State in positions to win these kind of football games?
I was going to say something the opposite. I mean, what's in the water to... Maybe it's just Big Ten teams.
Maybe so.
They have a hard time against App State.
App State's great. I mean, that was fun. They almost pulled that off. Penn State's program. Look, James Franklin tweeted, the only game that's important is App State. We're not looking ahead. App State. And I was like, all right, whatever. Just coach speak. No. That was real speak. Because App State came to play and play well. Holy cow. But that's a big deal to these schools. Listen, I was living in Charleston, South Carolina when Charleston Southern went to Gainesville the first time back in 2009. And I talked to the coach at the time, and he told me flat out, he goes, that's an important game for us for a couple of reasons. One, we get money for our budget. We get money for our school's athletic budget. It's a big, big paycheck for us to go down there and play Florida. But two, our guys... they don't get to play in stadiums like that. They don't get to play in front of a crowd like that. They don't get to play a program like that. We're going to play our season in front of small crowds in small little what you call stadiums, and that's what we're going to do. And for one time, these guys get to be on TV. These guys get to run out of a tunnel in front of 100,000 people, 90,000 people. Sure, you know, obviously it's not a home game. But still, they get to play in a big stadium like that on a big stage. They love it. They got beat, killed, whatever. But that was what they got to go up against Tim Tebow, and that's what they did. So when you talk about, hey, look, Maryland lost a player. The player died. It was tragic, awful. Absolutely, people should have been held accountable. Of course, people should have been fired for that. Absolutely. But when people were calling for just kill the football program, just kill it. No, Maryland is not a football program that was out of control as this long history of being out of control. They hired the wrong guy. They hired the wrong guy, and they hired the wrong athletic trainer. And guess what? They didn't know, and they didn't see it, and they saw it too late, and it ended tragically. But you know what? There's no reason to kill jobs and everybody that's involved with the football program over that. You punish the people that were directly involved. You don't kill the whole business. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up, we'll talk to Kevin McGuire, again, NBC Sports, on the college football weekend. And it was a fun weekend. Like I said, the SEC did really well, except for Tennessee. The Pac-12, well, Oregon State got run over. Absolutely run over. Pac-12, UCLA lost to Cincinnati. Arizona lost to BYU, but BYU is a pretty good team. Arizona State, Herm Edwards did a very, very good job this weekend. Who else lost this weekend? Oh, Washington. I forgot about them. Colorado did well. Colorado's going to be a good team. They go to Nebraska this weekend. Renew an old rivalry against the Cornhuskers. But we'll talk about week one in college football with Kevin McGuire. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio or at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. It is SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, college football week one. Oh, so many things to get to. Kevin McGuire, NBC Sports. Talk some college football on the BetDSI.com inside line here on SB Nation AM. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. How are you today?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. Let's start with last night. What was the most surprising thing about Florida State's loss to Virginia Tech? And you can go to the Virginia Tech side of things, but what was the most surprising thing about what occurred last night in Tallahassee?
Honestly, I was a little surprised at how sloppy Florida State looked. I mean, it just didn't look like a team that came out with the energy that I was expecting this program to have, with Willie Taggart on the sideline, looking to turn the page off of what was a miserable season right from the start last year. They just didn't get it going at all, really. And credit Virginia Tech for a lot of that, because they did not make it easy for them whatsoever. That defense with Bud Foster once again came through in the biggest of stages. So kudos to Virginia Tech, but I was disappointed with the performance we saw from Florida State. And so now a little hesitant to see what they're going to do next, I think.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because does Florida State, are they loaded talent-wise and then just failed to execute, or is this a team that's kind of missing some pieces and kind of needing some work?
Maybe they need a little bit more work than I expected. I really did think that last year just got off to the wrong foot with injuries, and it just kind of derailed everything, and I really felt that Florida State was going to be a much better team this year. Not a team that would go on to compete against Clemson for that division or anything, but certainly better than what we saw last year. And that may still end up being the case. I don't want to overreact too much to one game, but it just wasn't a good look. So I really do feel like they do have some pieces there to have a successful, a better season, I should say. I don't know if I would use it as successful or not, but I still feel like the offensive line certainly needs help. That's probably a bigger area of concern than I thought was going to be the case going into the season. I do think that you can improve that along the way. You just got to take a look at what you're doing and figure out if you're doing anything wrong or if it really is a talent issue. I don't know if it is, but it certainly looked like it last night, and so I would think that that's certainly going to be an area of concern for Willie Taggart moving forward.
All right, let's go to Alabama. They use two quarterbacks. Saban doesn't want to commit to one or the other. Fine, he can do whatever he wants, but could that formula work when he gets to the SEC schedule, or does he really need to settle on a guy when he's going up against Auburn's defense, LSU's defense, et cetera?
I do think that he wants to settle on a guy, and it does look like they're ever going to go to a move forward as a starter. And I know Nick Saban says he wants to get Jalen Hurts involved somehow. I don't know exactly what he means by that. I don't know what the plan's going to be, but I think history has shown anytime that Nick Saban has a quarterback decision to make, he may let them both play, or maybe three people play early on in the season, but he will make a decision, and he's going to stick with one guy for the most part for the rest of the course, unless he has to make a change moving down the line. But, and that's something that he's not going to be afraid to do. But he does want to have one guy, and I think that's part of the pressure and stress that gets to him a little bit. And he doesn't always handle it very well, of course, but I do think that history has shown he will find one guy and stick with him.
There's sort of an instant analysis read on college football because every game really does, you know, it has a level of importance. What's the instant analysis read on what occurred in South Bend with Michigan and Notre Dame for both teams?
Notre Dame, I think, is going to be a pretty good team. I still think they are going to need some help offensively because they're going to have some really tough games ahead of them this season. And they did get off to a good start against Michigan, but, you know, there wasn't anything overly impressive, I think, with them through the next three quarters of play. They just got off to a jump. They got off to a quick start and were able to take advantage of that. So good for them for doing that. For Michigan, it's still going to be a little bit of a work in progress for this offense. I think a lot of people were expecting that the addition of Shea Patterson was really just going to kind of hit the light switch for this offense and everything was going to be good. That clearly wasn't the case. You know, these next couple of weeks, though, I think are going to be good for he and the entire Michigan offense. They'll get the chance to play at home against some competition that's not quite as good as Notre Dame, so they can get into a comfort zone before they jump into Big Ten play. So if they don't improve these next couple of weeks, I would be really concerned, but I think they've got a good chance to do that.
All right, Kevin McGuire joins us, NBC Sports, talking some college football. And I know the Maryland Terrapins football program has gone through a lot with the death of Jordan McNair and all of the controversy around that. But as a football team that beat Texas on Saturday, how good are the Terps?
They're okay. If they stay healthy, I feel like that's a team that has potential to be an eight-win team that probably has a ceiling, and they could probably score an upset against somebody if they're playing at home. It's not going to be easy, certainly in that division. I would not expect them to win games against teams like Ohio State. And even though they had some shaky debuts, I think Penn State and Michigan State are still ahead of Maryland pretty comfortably. And then, of course, you know, Michigan will be interesting too. But, you know, this Maryland team has some young players and has some good youth, and they're still trying to build something. I don't know what's going to happen with their head coaching situation moving forward, and that could throw a wrench in the whole plans here, but I do feel like as long as Maryland stays healthy, they're going to be a pretty entertaining team.
What happened to Texas? I may have to go back in time to find a point where something went wrong with the program. What happened to the Longhorns? Why do I feel like every year it's, no, they're still rebuilding. They still need a couple of holes to fill. Why is that occurring with such a big school like that?
I honestly don't know because I look at Texas and all the resources they have and all the recruiting that they should be able to be doing and all the player development that they should be able to do. And that's its program that should be on the same level as Oklahoma on a regular basis. You know, if you have a down year, one year, fine. But I mean, Texas has had how many down years in a row now? So
exactly.
Texas is going to be the ultimate sleeping giant kind of a situation right now. And I still think Tom Herman can get them awakened to be that at that level, but it's clearly taking a little bit longer. And I knew when Charlie Strong took over, I cautioned people it's going to take him a couple years to get the recruiting up to speed and build the program he likes. And now we had to hit the reset button with Tom Herman, who took over a similar situation where it's going to take him a couple years to recruit and get the players in. And obviously, it's still a work in progress. I do think they'll take some steps forward this year. I think it's going to show moving forward. And I think that there were some bright spots you could probably take from that Maryland loss. Who knows how the weather delay impacted the game. Obviously, Maryland had to deal with it too, so I can't really use it as an excuse for Texas. But you know, maybe the game goes differently if it's not interrupted. I don't know. But I do think we're going to see some steps forward for Texas as the season progresses. When you get too down on the opening loss to Maryland, yes, it stinks if you're a Texas fan, but you know, there's still a lot of football to play, so we'll see what happens.
When people use the word upset, it can have all sorts of degrees, but how would you use it with LSU's win over Miami? Was that a big upset? Or, I mean, it's still LSU, no matter what the number next to it is.
Yeah, I mean, every time I doubt Ed Orgeron, he comes up and gets a win like that, so I don't know what to make of it, because I really felt as though I felt like Miami was going to be the better team going in, and I picked Miami to win the game. I wasn't necessarily surprised that LSU was the winner, I was shocked, though, at how they won. I mean, they just completely manhandled Miami, so I did not expect to see that at all. I'm very curious to see if that's going to be the trend for LSU going into this for the rest of the season, or if this is just kind of a one game, you know, neutral site. The emotions were running high before the game started, so maybe that gives them a little bit of extra juice. So, but yeah, I'm very curious to see, you know, with Joe Burrow coming in at quarterback, not really being as spectacular at the position, but certainly managing the offense. And I think, you know, if LSU can get that out of him, LSU could be pretty interesting to watch this season, especially if that defense is going to play the way that they did all season.
All right, now this question may be more about a perception and maybe public perception, but I thought Washington needed to win that game against Auburn. For the Pac-12, did they need that to happen?
I feel like that as well, because I don't think Washington's going to get through the rest of the season without a loss. I think everybody in the Pac-12 is going to lose a conference game at some point. So I look at that game against Auburn, and I feel like that's a game that Washington could really use. Do they need it? Maybe not. I mean, if they do run the table the rest of the year, you're talking about a 12-1 Washington team as a Pac-12 champion, I would feel pretty good about their playoff situation in that scenario. But like I said, I don't know if anybody gets through conference play without a loss. And, you know, a two-loss Pac-12 champion does not stand a very good chance under the situation we probably will see at the end of the season.
I want to get your thoughts on UCF, and I've looked at their schedule, and they've got a game against North Carolina, and I think SMU's on their schedule, but they could run the table and go undefeated. If they do that, does the committee then go, all right, Knights, we see you, or are they still a problem being on the outside of that kind of Power Five group?
I still think they would be on the outside looking in, but I think if you're talking about an undefeated UCF again, I don't think the selection committee can ignore them. as they, you know, they kind of held them off to the corner for as long as they possibly could last year until they had to throw them into the Peach Bowl. It would be interesting because the schedule is going to be a little bit more impressive looking, I think, at the end of the year if UCF's undefeated, because they'll have two games against ACC opponents, which they had one game against Georgia Tech that was washed out last year due to weather. So, you know, they would have a couple wins against Power Conference teams in this scenario. Not great Power Conference teams, but still it helps add to your resume a little bit. And then you look in conference play, you know, a win against Memphis could still look very good. You play Houston at some point, that would look pretty good. And I think that would have to come in the conference championship game if that's the situation. So, I mean, there's the possibility that UCF could certainly at least be on the radar when these rankings first come out. And I think the selection committee after last year, they had no reason not to have them on the radar. And then if they're undefeated at the end of the year, let's look at where the other candidates are looking like. I mean, if there are undefeated Power Conference kind of teams, almost no shot for UCF. But if there's a, you know, one-loss, two-loss champion or one-loss, two-loss teams that are in the running, you know, certainly you can make a case for UCF.
Kevin, good stuff as always. Appreciate it. Hope to get you on soon. Thanks a lot, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
You got it. And our guest lines are sponsored by BetDSI.com. Use promo code NATION25 and get $25 free wager today. Get all the plays and the inside line, BetDSI.com. I agree with him on this. I think if you're the committee and UCF goes unbeaten, you've got to have them in the conversation. I don't know if you put them in because it's, again, the committee really wants and the committee's goal is to give you the best college football teams. And it's not about going undefeated. And I think that was the big misnomer about what happened with UCF. I mean, yes, they went undefeated, but the committee was never about your record. It used to be that way. I mean, I'm old enough to remember a college football where you lost a game and that was it. You better hope everybody loses a game. Because if you went undefeated, it didn't matter who you were. I mean, you go back to the late 80s and West Virginia, for example, with Major Harris playing against Notre Dame. I mean, that's the kind of national championship kind of matchup you could get. But we also have had situations where Florida, for example, in 1996, lost to Florida State in Tallahassee during the regular season. But then through a situation on New Year's Day where Jake Plummer in Arizona State gets beaten by Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, so then they suffer a loss. Florida avenges that loss to Florida State, and they win the polling. The committee basically said, look, we're going to take everybody's body of work, and then we're going to pick the four teams to play for the national title. And if you have a loss, even if you don't play for your conference championship, but we like how you look and we like who you are, That's who we're going to consider. If Central Florida, UCF, and I don't want to call them Central Florida because UCF is their name. If UCF runs the table again, okay, then this committee is going to have to say, what do we do with this? Exactly what do we do with this team? They're playing out of the AAC. The Houston Cougars played out of the AAC a couple of years ago, and there was a conversation about them if they went undefeated when Tom Herman was there. If UCF does go undefeated, I think there's a conversation that takes place. But it also depends on where we're at in college football. One of the things you have to be careful of, it's like what we talked about with the underdog in college basketball, is that what you want to be careful of is you in the tournament, if the tournament plays out that a small school makes it to the Final Four, it makes it to the Final Four. But that doesn't mean that they'll show up in that game, and that doesn't mean they'll get blown out. You know, sometimes the fact that you're a small school catches up to you and the big school dominates you. Maybe not. In football, you have to be really careful of that. But if UCF earns it, it earns it. And people thought last year they couldn't hang with a bigger school, right? Until they played Auburn. And when they played Auburn and beat Auburn, then people went, okay, maybe we were wrong. Maybe on that stage they could compete. So I think if you're the committee, you definitely have to put them together. And they could go unbeaten again. They've got North Carolina and SMU on their schedule, but the rest is their conference foes that they could beat. 800-777-2907. It is Tony D and Ron Culver on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, I'm so excited for the way the SEC showed up this weekend. You know what I'm going to do, Ron Culver? I'm going to celebrate with like biscuits and gravy and a big old gallon of sweet tea. How about that?
Oh, half of it sounds good.
What, the biscuits and gravy?
Yeah, I'm not a big tea fan.
Sweet tea is like crack cocaine.
Oh, I know it is. It's all through the South. Okay. I just don't get it.
First year I moved to South Carolina, right? I said, ooh, I want iced tea. And so I got sweet tea. First, I never had sweet tea before. I always had the iced tea. I had to put the like little sugar packets in. I never had sweet tea before. And I loved it. And I drank it every day. And I loved it. I think I gained 15 pounds. Probably had three cavities. That thing is made with sugar sludge.
Nah, that's not for me.
It's great. It's pure goodness.
I haven't embraced the South.
I'm
going to
have some grits. I'm going to have some biscuits. Way to go, SEC, this weekend. Except for you, Tennessee. Way to disappoint.
Will it be Insta-grits?
It will not be. No Southerner uses Insta-grits. SB Nation AM.